user fees, a 2008 agenda, and why Bobby Sturgill may not get confirmed. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest again today is Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation comes at public problems from a free market perspective and looks for mechanisms that will allow market forces to solve these problems instead of government action. Is that a fair capsule of it, Bob?
That's a pretty good overview, yes. I mean, we're not doctrinaire, but we really do think that free market type policies have a better track record than centralized government command and control regulatory approaches. We obviously think government has a role to play in setting the basic framework, but within that framework, whenever you can use market type mechanisms, you're likely to have better outcomes.
All right. Now, the big thing, obviously, in transportation studies as affects users of the aviation system has been the issue of user fees. It was a contentious debate during 2007 as the FAA authorization was winding down to its expiration in September. It was extended. It hasn't really been dealt with yet in 2008. I want to ask you, some members of Congress have already said that the user fee issue is going to be dead for this time around, this cycle of FAA funding. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree. I think it's in the Senate bill as drafted. It's true that Senator Lott, who was one of its champions, has retired from the Senate. But Senator Rockefeller, who after all is a Democrat and strongly championed the $25 per IFR turbine flight user fee, I believe, as far as I know, remains committed to it and would take action. It would require action on the floor to strip that out of the bill. And I don't think that's likely to happen.
Well, now, in terms of reconciling the House versus the Senate when this all gets done, is that going to be an arduous process, do you think?
I think it will be very arduous because not only the user fees, which are in the Senate bill but not the House bill, but also the provision in the House bill that would reopen the NATCA union contract. There's nothing like that in the Senate bill. The White House has already said that that issue alone, if it's in the final bill, would be grounds for a veto. And so if they keep that in the bill, they would have to have a veto-proof majority in order to be able to override the veto. So I don't think that's likely to happen. But what that says is that the Senate draft may be closer to the final version than the House draft.
So do you think that it'll come through essentially intact, the Senate version now? In other words, is there likely to be a $25 per IFR flight plan on turbine aircraft as a sort of introductory user fee to try to get, as Phil Boyer likes to say, the camel's nose in the tent?
I wouldn't say likely, but I'd say you certainly can't rule that out. It's a live possibility. And, you know, the purpose of that user fee is you know, it's not to bedevil Phil Boyer and his colleagues at the NBAA. It's to create a revenue stream for a bonding source to issue revenue bonds specifically and totally for next-gen capital expenditures, which all of aviation really needs sooner rather than later.
Okay, well, this obviously then is going to look a lot like 2007 when things really get rolling. Will things really get rolling, being a year in which the Bush administration's in somewhat of a lame duck status? And, I mean, will things just keep getting extended?
That is a serious possibility. On issues where there's a lot of disagreement between the White House and the Democratic positions, and I say positions because there's not a single one on these issues, there's a great temptation for Democratic leadership to say, well, let's just stall. Let's put off making fundamental policy decisions that would have to somehow comport with the White House and just wait them out until the end of the administration, and they hope a Democratic administration will be in power and more favorable to the kind of positions they would like to see.
All right, that is a nice segue into Bobby Sturgill, acting FAA administrator, by all descriptions, a very able, talented, qualified guy with a deep aviation background in several different sectors of aviation. Everybody seems to like him except the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, which came out with a very blunt statement a few days ago that said, we don't want this guy confirmed. We think it's a bad idea. Tell us what's going on there and what you expect to happen. Will he be confirmed anyway?
Well, I wouldn't bet on it. I'd say he might, but the same scenario that I outlined of refusing to hold a confirmation hearing or voting him down would be at least tempting for the leaders in the Democratic Party that want to curry favor with unions in general and NAFTA in particular. The idea would be, well, why put up with somebody that the unions don't like and he'd then be locked in place for 5 years? When if we just wait them out until February or so of next year, their hope for Democratic president would presumably appoint someone more union-friendly.
I, at the risk of putting you in an area where you may not be comfortable, what do you think the odds of that scenario coming to pass for the union?
It's very. I would say I would not bet in favor of it. I think it is possible, but I think with all of aviation except for that one union favorable to Bobby Sturgill, and him having impeccable credentials and experience for the job, I would still say my majority betting would be that he does get confirmed. But you can't rule anything like that out in an election year.
Assuming he does get confirmed, will there be any differences, A, between Bobby Sturgill, the permanent guy, versus the interim guy, and any differences between Bobby Sturgill and Marion Blakey in terms of how the FAA runs?
I see him more as a continuation of Marion Blakey, which is one of the reasons that NACA doesn't want him confirmed. I have not had any indications so far of any strong policy differences, but you know that remains to be seen. And what you see in an acting administrator is not necessarily the same as you'd see in someone who's assured of a five-year term. I mean, a five-year term is sort of like what you get with a Supreme Court justice or a Federal Reserve Board member. They're somewhat insulated from politics. FAA obviously has to go to Congress for its budget, so they're not totally insulated by any means. But it does give a certain degree of independence from having that fixed term, which was the original intent to make the position less politicized.
Well, if nothing else, it takes it out of sync with the normal presidential election cycle.
That's right, and I think in general that's a plus.
All right. We're talking with Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We're going to look ahead to the rest of 2008 and touch again on user fees versus general aviation in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We've held Bob over another day to talk about some issues we didn't get to in our last conversation. Bob, I want to ask you about the 2008 agenda for the Reason Foundation. What is on the Reason Foundation's plate other than just its involvement in the user fee debate?
Well, we clearly are going to be involved in the debate on that, in trying to work for as good a reauthorization bill for FAA as we can. But we're very strongly involved in the issue of airport congestion pricing. Our big report came out in December and is on our website. I'll be participating in an Aviation Week conference on this subject in New York next month. It's February 13th and 14th. We will be looking for opportunities to speak at other aviation conferences, to be networking with people in aviation and the business community in New York City, where the issue is really at a focal point with the New York airports. So that's going to be another major issue. Another thing we're certainly following closely is the potential privatization of Midway Airport in Chicago through a long-term lease. If that gets approved, which means the remaining airlines besides Southwest would have to likewise sign up for it and agree to comply with the provisions of the pilot program law, then we will spend more attention the rest of the year on the issue of airport privatization, because there are a lot of implications in terms of how to make sure that's good policy, that's good for aviation, as well as for city and county governments.
Now, Bob, you and the foundation in general have been advisors in some capacity to several administrations. How does that what is the mechanism behind that? Is that something that just is kind of expected when a new administration comes in after having been involved so long? Or is there a process of convincing a new president or a new administration that you need to be involved?
Most of the previous involvements have come at the initiative of people in the various administrations. Sometimes it's because we already knew people who got appointed to places like the Office of Domestic Policy offices or the National Economic Council. In the case of the Clinton White House, the first contact we had on infrastructure issues was somebody that I already knew. Later on air traffic control reform issues, we worked with Vice President Gore's National Performance Review at their invitation, and later with a woman on the staff, an economist on the staff of the National Economic Council in the White House at her invitation. So it varies depending. In the Bush administration, it's more that I already knew some key people in domestic policy and economic policy positions and suggested that we had some ideas and information that they might find useful. They agreed, and so we've had ongoing discussions.
All right. Now, the Bush administration in particular seems to have been friendly to at least considering free market solutions to a lot of problems that over the previous 8 years had been, what, are you out of your mind?
Well, it's interesting, actually, on the issue of air traffic control reform. I think, you know, you actually, surprisingly, have a lot of continuity between the what the Clinton administration wanted to do and what the Bush administration proposed with its FAA reauthorization. If you think way back to 94, 95, the Clinton White House proposed an air traffic control corporation funded by user fees, except on general aviation. There was that slight difference. But they proposed a thoroughgoing reform, and then later they had a key hand in the Mineta Commission in 97, which supported a slightly altered version of the same thing. So there's actually a lot of continuity on that issue between the two administrations.
All right, final question here. You had some writing recently about general aviation's use of air traffic control resources, and you were particularly critical of how some of the groups, the alphabet groups, as we like to call them, have portrayed this. AOPA and NBAA tend to, you know, quote numbers based on airport usage.
Yes.
And where a lot of the cost is not in airport usage.
That's correct. There's a lot of ATC cost and complexity in the TRACONs. And in the case of the New York airports in particular, the alphabet groups keep saying correctly that only a handful of GA planes, mostly business jets, land or take off at Newark, LaGuardia, and Kennedy, which are the most congested airports. Absolutely true. However, in the TRACON airspace, the New York TRACON airspace, 27% of all IFR flight operations are GA. And that's very complex, intertwined airspace, you know, so that definitely affects the level of congestion and delays in getting in and out of that area's airspace. And the total delays in that airspace have more than doubled from 2004 to 2007. And the TRACON contribution to the total delays today, 2007 figures, were 13% of all delays were TRACON related. So you can't say that GA has nothing to do with that. It's true. It's not landing to any significant degree at the three major passenger airports, but it's a big factor in the airspace.
All right. Now, the one other question for you, this would be a devil's advocate question, comes about when people say, well, the only reason GA is even required to interface with the TRACONs is in order for the airlines to, you know, get these people out of the way, or that this is all somehow traced back to a function of TRACONs and ATC in general as clearing the air in necessary spots for the airline industry. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that's an unfair way to portray the situation in that. It's a huge, huge metro area, New York, New Jersey, Southern Connecticut. There's loads of GA flights, including lots of business jet flights, going in and out of Teterboro and White Plains and some of the other in Morristown. And they basically are using the same airspace as airlines. And with 27% of IFR flight operations in that overall TRACON airspace, you can't say they're just a marginal user. Sorry, that just doesn't wash. We're all in this together type of situation. Every additional IFR flight makes airspace even more crowded and complex, and I think everybody has a stake in getting the problem solved. You can't just say, well, we didn't cause it because we weren't there first. They are there now, regardless of whether they were there first.
Well, Bob, you know, as always, we love to talk to you because you're well-informed and articulate and express your positions well. And I know that in some cases, you know, this raises the neck hairs of many members of our listening audience.
It does. But I welcome debate. Thanks, Bob.
My guest has been Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find more about the foundation at www.reason.org. And just look for transportation and you'll find Bob's writings. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at Aero, that's AERO-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.